Coming up tomorrow night at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck, they'll be having a thriller night with bestselling authors Marshall Karp, a friend of ours and the author of the book Don't Tell Me How to Die, and Eric Rickstad, also a friend, and the author of the book Remote the Six. Eric joins us this morning to tell us more about the new novel, which is just out. Eric is the New York Times bestselling author of Lilith, I Am Not Who You Think I Am, named a New York Times Best Thriller of the Year, Reap, What Remains of Her, and the Canaan Crime Trilogy. The new book, Remote the Six, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Eric Rickstad to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot. What brought you to want to really to write in this genre in the first place?
Well, there are several things. Writing in the crime thriller genre, one was an incident with a friend of mine in childhood who was a few years older than me. I was 12 when he moved into our neighborhood in Vermont, and he was about 15. He lived there for about 4 years or so, and then moved to the Southwest. And he was a great guy, charming guy, could charm the socks off, you know, a toddler to your great grandmother, athletic, easygoing, you know, generous. And about 2 years after he left, I was watching CNN. This is the late 80s. And on came what would be the first live fugitive chase in history on TV. And so that alone was, you know, alarming. It sort of took me by surprise. I started watching it. And this fugitive who was on the run from life in prison for kidnapping in Texas had robbed a bank in Denver, Colorado, and it escaped, robbed it at gunpoint, took the money, fled in his vehicle, ended up striking and killing a state trooper in his escape, crashed that vehicle, tried to kidnap a young woman and her toddler, shot at the helicopter that was chasing them. And the only way he was able to be tracked by the police was this CNN helicopter reporting back to them where he was at the moment. He shot at the helicopter. He ended up kidnapping a elderly man and hit on the floor of this elderly man's truck while he drove. And finally, this helicopter pilot, who was also a Vietnam helicopter pilot, had enough, and he set the helicopter down just hovering above the parking lot, the pavement of a parking lot, to stop this man so the police could convene, haul the older man out, the kidnapped victim, and proceeded to shoot this fugitive on live TV, watching this 13 times. And then they showed his mugshot and said his name, and it was my friend. Mm. And ever since then, there has been this need for me, as I think there is for all of us, to understand violent crime, what leads to it, what happens to what seemed a very generous, affable, funny, handsome young man, and within 2 years became this criminal, and very desperate criminal, very violent criminal. And we subsequently learned, my family and I and friends of his family learned, that something very traumatic had happened before they moved to Vermont that laid the seeds to this sort of behavior, an escalation in violence and desperation. And so that was one of the biggest things, was examining how does a person arrive at this place? How does one become a violent? Mm. And it's affected my writing. And then, of course, I've known victims of violent crimes. Not of course, but many of us have. I have three sisters, and women are often, you know, victims of violent crime, or, you know, threats of violent crime. They've got to live in a different world than we men do. But being with a single mom and three sisters, I saw a lot of the things they had to navigate. And so in my crime novels, in my thrillers, I like to examine how one arrives at that place, but also really focus on the victims and the aftermath and the changing of one's arc of life when you are a victim of a crime, whether it's violent or not, and sort of exploring that through that genre, all the human elements that come up because of that.
So, Eric, with that backstory, do you think that allows you when you not that you would, but if you were to compare just sort of your novels against the mainstream of thriller writing, that there is more empathy in the sense of an understanding of how that person got to the place where such a crime would be committed, which often isn't the case. They just come in as the devil.
Yeah, I try to examine that, and the backgrounds of criminals and how they arrive there. There is more empathy, and then there is also an examination of that empathy and understanding and context, combined with the idea that my friend included, these people can have very hidden lives and fool you and be very manipulative. And so as we learn more about my friend, there was this great part of him that was this person that was kind and outgoing and all these things, but there was also a side of him that was very hidden and very compulsive and very manipulative in some way. So I would say, overall there's the empathy and then a greater context of how they can operate to fool people as well, or fool the justice system. So I think in a lot of ways they are different than a lot of mainstream thrillers.
Eric Rickstedt is our guest, and the new novel just out this month is Remote the Six. And so here we deal with a serial killer who is just rampaging and tying families to chairs, arranged in these tableaus, and then murdering them without any trace of evidence. What brought you to that idea of this type of terror?
Yeah, and it is terror. It's twofold. I think we all, and many of us have a repulsion and are also drawn in by serial killers. And I found out about Ted Bundy when I was in like fifth grade reading a Reader's Digest thing, and saw all these photos of this guy who looked like many different men, but they were all pictures of this chameleon, Ted Bundy. And at the time, he wasn't really all that well known. And I found out he grew up, or was born across the street from where my mom was grew up and was born in Burlington, Vermont. And that sort of always stuck with me. But there's this, I wanted to understand them a little bit more and also have something that could take place across the country. It is in some ways a classic FBI cat and mouse manhunt, but there's also that allure of what these people are like and how manipulative they are and how cunning and how they can get away without getting caught for sometimes years, sometimes forever. If we didn't have DNA evidence, there'd be so many more that are still out there just living lives that no one even knows have killed several people. Every day it seems like someone from the 70s, 80s, 90s that is caught only because of DNA. And I was interested in how this is set up with someone doing this horrific act, but also the why. Why? What compels this killer? And in this book, it sort of starts to lean into, I'd say, speculative to borderline sci-fi, in that he has his own reasons and he's been part of something, a government clandestine program his whole life, and is doing these things and killing these people because he feels it will unlock a key for him in a way that he and few other people could ever understand.
I know this book is going to be part of a series. Did you know that from the very beginning?
Yeah, we had a sense, and I had a sense it would be, several books, if not at least the two. There's another one coming out July 8th. That's the follow-up to this one. And the more I wrote it, the more it sort of opened itself up to all of these, as I was saying, like these clandestine, almost conspiratorial, very control-driven experiments and government operations that are going on that this person may or may not have been a part of. And so it opened up even more to, the possibilities of several books.
And that type of writing about these conspiratorial aspects, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but that must be fun.
Oh, it is fun. Yeah, I mean, it is fun. I mean, I could talk very seriously about things, but yeah, this is very much a you know an FBI manhunt, cat and mouse, high stakes thriller with this you know serial killer rampaging and has this very unique reason for why he's doing it. You know, that's tied up in conspiracies and cutting very very cutting edge scientific endeavors with you know human genomes and CRISPR and those types of things without giving too much away, but he's very much involved in a you know private and government conspiracy and manipulation of human behavior and so it's a, so it is a lot of fun. It is also very much a fun in the way that you know Silence of the Lambs is fun or books like those or the Zodiac, even though they have their you know their heavy sort of elements as well, but it is very much a thriller and suspense as well.
Tell us about the main character here, FBI Special Agent Lucas Stark, as well as taking on a new partner here and how the relationship between these two men and what allows you to say, okay, these are people that I want to be around for a while.
Right. So one is Lucas Stark is a special FBI agent. And he's very pragmatic and very disciplined and very, you know, evidence driven as are most, as are all FBI agents to one degree or another. And then he's forced to work with this man, Giles Garner, who is a very enigmatic, strange, odd, loner type person, but he's also been directed to work directly with Lucas Stark from the FBI director himself, and he's worked with the CIA, and the title remote comes from the idea that he is a remote viewer. He can see events unfolding live from anywhere around the globe. And the tableau killer has escaped. Even they don't even have a suspect. The case is cold. Families continue to be killed and they're forced to work together. And part of the fun of this is that Lucas Stark is such a skeptic about this type of thing. He just thinks, "Oh my God, I'm working for a psychic. You got to be kidding me. Where are we really that far gone? Am I doing that poorly of a job?" And so it's left to this Giles Garner who to prove to him that he can do what he says he can do, and that he can be of help. And in doing that, it sets it up in a fun way that you also have to convince the reader that he's legitimate and that he's not some hack who just is forced upon him and but can really benefit this thing. And the two end up working together, and there's always sort of a little bit of a doubt, which helps with the suspense that even when he proves very helpful and it seems like he can see what he's saying, he can see remote view, that you're always on edge, never quite sure who this man is. And in fact, he's not even quite sure who he is or why he can do what he can do. And so that's a lot of fun to write. This just sort of oil and water type characters that have been forced to work together for a bigger purpose and try to catch this killer using both their talents.
Eric Rickstad is the author of the new book, Remote the Six, which is now out. And as he mentioned, the next book, Remote the Five, will be out in July. Tomorrow night is Thriller Night at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck. It's at 6 o'clock, where Eric Rickstad will be talking about Remote the Six along with Marshall Karp and his new novel, Don't Tell Me How to Die. It is a thriller doubleheader, and it'll be tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to oblongbooks.com. Eric Rickstad, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure. Have a beautiful event tomorrow night.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. A delight. Again, the name of the new book is Remote the Six. It is published by Blackstone Publishing. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.